Arthur will say good morning. Let's begin. So today's daf is Ayin. Today's daf is 70. We are picking up Samech Tes on the day 69B, and we are picking up three lines off in the bottom. So we just have to close out yesterday's sugya with Rabbi Dosa, the Tzinuin, which is really just an amazing, amazing sugya. Some Ravina said the following. So we'll remember again, we seem to have had, it's funny how all of this begins with what appeared to be a relatively statement of Rabbi Yochanan that mamish just spiraled out of control over the course of a lot of Gemara. So remember again, all of this began with Rabbi Yochanan's statement that lemaisa, if you have a situation of a stolen item, so neither the thief nor the owner has the ability to mechadish the item. The thief doesn't have the ability to do so because it's not his, and ultimately the owner doesn't have the ability to do so because it is not in his rishus. So remember again, we got into a whole discussion over here. Does Rabbi Yochanan really hold of that? After Rabbi Yochanan subscribes, generally says that Aloch follows a Stam Mishnah. The Gemara quotes a Stam Mishnah. Ultimately, that seems to fly in the face of that, to which the Gemara says, well, that's Stam Mishnah. Thank you, say thank you. That Stam Mishnah ultimately is reflecting only a singular opinion of Rav Shimon Gamliel. Maybe that's all it was of a Stam Mishnah of a singular opinion. And then again, the Gemara goes on and on and on to the point that we looped back in, brought in the case of the Tznuin. And then Rabosa, if you remember again, we brought in two ideas. So just, I want to crystallize this one point, because I think I wasn't clear enough about it yesterday. So remember, the Gemara essentially was dealing with two issues. Issue number one was the ability to go ahead and change the status of something that is no longer in your rishus. The other issue the Gemara was dealing with was the issue of Breira. The issue of Breira is retroactive clarification. Now, the way that Breira works, I will say, is any time you make a statement that for which the metzios is not immediately clear, and it requires the metzios, the reality, to be defined at a later time, and then only retroactively shed light on your previous statement, that's called Breira. So for example, remember again, just to use the example, and then we really have to go on. There's no time for reviewing that, you know what I mean? But again, I just wanted to crystallize this point. But again, so for example, just to use the case of the Kerem Revai. So remember again, we had a whole machlokus with the Kerem Revai and the Leket. So remember again, with the Kerem Revai, the machlokus, well, same thing with Leket, was you have two cases where people were trying to make statements in order to allow others to avoid transgressing through theft. In the Karim Revai case, people were plucking grapes off my vine, and I didn't want them to be in violation of consumption of Karim Revai. In the Leket case, there were times where I dropped more than two stalks, and I didn't want the Aniyim to be in violation of Gezel. So the Shaila is, when do I make that statement that makes the Leket Hefker, or that goes ahead and deconsecrates the Karim Revai? So there are two possibilities. What are the two possibilities? Either A, before, right? There's only really good, right? The morning or the evening. So do I do it again in the morning before the aniyim collect, before people pick up the grapes? Now that's fine. There's only one issue, which is what? That requires Breira. Why? Because we also remember, at the time that I make this statement, and I'm being mafgir the stalks, I don't know which stalks I'm referring to. I don't know if there are stalks. I don't know if anyone's going to take the stalks. I don't know what the situation is. I'm just making this statement now. Karim Revai, I don't know if anyone's going to take grapes, which grapes they'll take. Therefore, it only turns out that at the end of the day, if an ani takes a third stalk, or somebody takes Karim Revai grapes, then lemaisa, now I realize that when I made this statement in the morning, retroactively, it becomes clear that the statement I made was referring to the grapes, to the stalks of wheat taken. However, if I make this statement in the evening, then that's when we get into Rabbi Yochanan's issue. Because we'll say, if I make the statement in the evening, then what? Then lemaisa, I'm changing the status of something that what? Is no longer in my rishus. So that's just the tension that we're experiencing. Fine. With that says the Gemara. Am Rabino. Three lines up from the bottom. Am Rabino. Labdam Rabbi Yochanan, Tznuin Rabbi Dosa, Amru Dabar Echad. Had Rabbi Yochanan not said that the Tznuin, which also was the case of Karim Revai, and Rabbi Dosa said the same thing, Hava Amina Man Tana Tznuin, I would have thought, who was the Tana? Who is the opinion behind the case of the Tznuin? Rabbi Dosa he. It would have been Rabbi Dosa. Ki hechi delo tikshi stam mishnah Rabbi Yochanan. And Rabbi Dosa, if we set it up that way, then there would not have been a kasha. There would not have been a kasha. Ultimately, again, of the Stam Mishnah of Shimon Gamliel against Rabbi Yochanan. But Rabbi Yochanan, top of Ayin, Kistam Yechidah, Lo Amar. And Rabbi Yochanan, ultimately, we would say, would not have held of the first Stam Mishnah that reflected the view of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, because even though we say that Rabbi Yochanan holds like a Stam Mishnah, that's only Rabbi Yochanan, the Stam Mishnah is what is attributed to the general Rove. But if the Stam Mishnah only reflects the view of one person, Rabbi Yochanan does not necessarily subscribe to it. Amri Nardoi. Nardoim said, Lo Kasvina, so now we're switching gears a little bit. So this is another fascinating case. The Nardoim said, Lo Kasvina Orkisa Amataltali. You cannot write an Orkisa. What's an Orkisa? Rashi says a Harsha. The Rabbi said, Amataltali means movable property. Now, what the Gemara seems to be saying is the following. Reuven owes me 10 watches. He owes me 10 watches. Rabbi said, so watches are Amataltali. I don't have time now to start. Now, Reuven, we have some machlokes. I don't have any time to deal with this with Reuven. So what I want to do is I want to write a shtar harsha. So a shtar harsha, so I guess there's got to be a better word for it, but we call it a power of attorney. But there's probably a better word for it. It's a document that enables someone else to go ahead and follow up on your claim. No attorneys here this morning. What? Collection, but I'm saying there's a name for this type of power of attorney, right? Just to give you a frame of reference, all of you sign a shtar hasha when you sell your chametz, right? So when you sign your chametz, you owe. I should say most times when rabbanim sell chametz, I'm sorry,
trustee,
right? You make somebody a right, but it's not really a trustee. It's I'm empowering someone to conduct business on my behalf. Whatever you want to call it, a power of attorney. So, Yankee,
power of attorney.
Thank you. Right. You've been designated now as Dafyomi Legal Counsel, Aruch Hashem. First lawyer to show up gets that. And first of all, welcome back to Yanki and a Mazel Tov on the birth of his daughter. We haven't been able to give him a Mazel Tov. Mazel Tov. So well, it says the Gemara the following. So remember again, so now this is something very interesting. So you can't sign a power of attorney to allow someone else to collect my metalkin. So I can't sign a power of attorney with Reuven, to go ahead and litigate with Shimon to go ahead and get back my metalkin. My time, what's the reason for that? So I'm really Mishund Rabbi Yochanan. We're supposed to listen to this because of Rabbi Yochanan. Because what did Rabbi Yochanan say? Then Rabbi Yochanan, Gezav Lonis Yeshua Bailim, Shneim Eni Yecholin Lahakdish. Because Rabbi Yochanan said that if an item was stolen, so and the Bailim did not yet give up ownership or did not despair from reclaiming the item, neither the owner nor the thief could make the item hekdish. Why? Zelafi Sheinu Shalo, so the thief can't do it because it's not his. Vezeh, and the owner can't do it. Why? Lafi Sheinu Birshuso, because it's not his. So Rabbi says, what does this have to do with our Shah? Look at Rashi. Mishund Rabbi Yochanan, Tahoil Ve'enu Birshus HaBailim. Listen to this. So therefore, interestingly enough, apparently what the Gemara is saying is the following. Because I don't have the metaltolin in my possession, in order to sign a power of attorney, there has to be the ability to go ahead and convey ownership of the item or responsibility of the item over to the person receiving the power of attorney. But in this case over here, because the metalkin are not in the reshus of the bailim, I can't convey that power of attorney to another party. Now we'll clarify this in just a moment. Ika d'amri, so others explain. Amri nardoi, lo kasina orkesa ametaltali de kafre. So we'll say there's another version of this statement. And in this version of the statement, under normal circumstances, no, I can't create a power of attorney with another party to collect my metaltolin from a third party. I absolutely can do that. Where does the problem come up, Rabbi saying? I can't fill out a power of attorney form to appoint Reuven to collect my metaltolin from Shimon when what? When Shimon denies that he has any of my metaltolin. So why can't I sign a power of attorney form with Reuven to become my shaliach, to become my agent, to go ahead and collect the metaltolin from Shimon when Shimon denies the existence ultimately of the metaltolin? So the Gemara says, Taima de Kafri. The reason is because Shimon has denied any kind of liability for the metaltolin. So we'll say, if that's the case, look at Rashi. I'm sorry. The Mechse Keshikra. Because we'll say, watch this. If I go ahead and draw up a power of attorney document with Reuven, and in that power of attorney document, it says that I'm empowering Reuven to go ahead and collect my metaltolin from Shimon. And what's Shimon's position in this whole thing? What does Shimon say? I don't owe you anything. The Gemara says, it's Mechse Keshikra. It looks like, how can you sign a document ultimately that says that I'm empowering Reuven to collect metaltlin from Shimon when Shimon is presently claiming that what? That he has no metaltlin in his possession. So because such a document, now again, it could be that Shimon's lying and I am correct, but to go ahead and fill out a shtar like that and have Edom sign on a shtar where the supposed holder of those metaltlin is claiming that lo hayu dvarim me'olam is mechsei k'shikra, has the appearance of lying. Look at Rashi. Rashi says demechsei techasmidon hashikra, because you must remember Edom signed on the power of attorney, and if Shimon is claiming I don't have any of your metaltlin, I don't know what you're talking about, then it looks like a lie. Yoyev le shliach midi de les le gabe heich. But I will say, in a case where, let's say again, Shimon, the supposed holder of the metaltalin, is not denying that he's holding my metaltalin, then what? Then kasvina. So we'll say, this version seems to make a little bit more sense than the first one. The first one seemed to say that you can't create a power of attorney when you don't have the object of your possession. Which Rabbi said, the Gemara says, just seems a bit strange. I think Gemara tries to bring a right from Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan's case is really dramatically different. Rabbi Yochanan's case is altering the status of the item when it's not in your reshus. That doesn't really line up with the case of the power of attorney. Therefore, the Gemara says, you're right, there's another version. What it means is, the Naradoim said that when can you appoint someone, when can you create a power of attorney to allow Reuven to collect my metaltalin from Shimon? That's only if Shimon agrees that he has my metaltalin, then I could appoint him. But to drop a power of attorney document when Shimon denies the very existence of the metaltalin, good morning, Mr. Schoenfeld, can't be done. Why? Because lemais, again, then it's mechsei k'shikra. Because then it has the appearance, ultimately, again, of a falsehood. Because here, I'm having witnesses sign on a document that says that Shimon owes me something when Shimon himself is saying it's absolutely unequivocally not true. But I mean, Ardoi. Both another thing about Ardoi. Orkisa de lo ksivbe zil don vizachi va'apik linafshach lesbe mishasha. But another interesting halacha. A power of attorney document that does not have the line in it that says zil don, go and adjudicate this case, va'apik linafshach, and take the proceeds for yourself, less bay mishasha, does not have any value. Look at Rashi. Rashi says the following. My time, what's the reason? Bless you. Mishum da'amar leheich, mishum da'amar leheich, lav abal dvarim didiat. Because we'll say, now here's what's interesting, bless you. Now you'll say to yourself, that doesn't sound like a power of attorney. Right? A power of attorney is where I'm appointing someone to act as my agent. But yet here, what the Gemara is saying over here, is that a power of attorney in halacha only works if what? If the lashon of the power of attorney essentially conveys the right of collection to the agent. So if the power of attorney says, here, listen to these wordings, zildon, go and adjudicate the case, vizachi, va'apik linafshach, and you could keep the proceeds of this transaction for yourself. That is a real power of attorney. Why? Because I will say, if the shaliach doesn't have that koach, if he can't technically keep the proceeds for himself, then guess what? When he shows up to Beis Din to adjudicate against Shimon, the supposed holder of the metaltalin, what is Shimon going to say? Right? Lav bal dvarim didiat, which means what? Rabbi Osai? Shimon says, I don't know you. I don't know you, Reuven, right? Silber wants to come and get his metaltalin, that's fine. He's the person I have the financial relationship with. You, I have no financial relationship with. It's very nice that you have some type of power of attorney, but I don't have a relationship with you. And as such, again, there is no obligation for me to discuss this matter with you. But if Reuven, my shaliach, has a power of attorney that says, essentially, I give him over the power of collection and ownership of the metaltalin, then what? Then what? Then Reuven says, oh yes, you do have to talk to me because I am the new owner ultimately again of these metaltalin. So we'll say, now does it actually mean that I'm relinquishing my ownership over the metaltalin? So we're going to see, but what at least it means from a document perspective is that I have to go ahead and convey to him the ability to not only act as my shalach, but to collect. Because if not, again, then Shimon has the ability to say, lav bal dvarim didiat. Amr Abayis. Abayis says, well, let's analyze this. V'ikasiv be'lemechza l'shlishel revia. What happens if instead of giving over the entire amount, I say to Reuven Mashaliach, listen, I'm hereby giving you one quarter, right, one third, one quarter, or half, one third or one quarter of the proceeds from the sale of the metaltalin. So what happens in that case? To which the Gemara says that works fine. Why? Because migo de mishtai dina apalga, mishtai dina akula. Because since he has the power now to adjudicate the case for what? For half, a third, or a fourth of the value of the metaltalin, he has the ability to go ahead and negotiate with Shimon for the entire month. As we both say, that halacha l'maisa, once he has a partial financial entitlement, that gives him a seat at the table. The idea over here at the Gemara is saying is, the only way that you're going to be able to get Shimon, who is the supposed holder of the metaltalin, to be able to go ahead and speak with Reuven my shaliach, is if Reuven has a financial interest in this transaction. But if he has no financial interest in this transaction, then he's going to run into the problem where Shimon's going to say to him, what? Lav bal dvar mdia. Shavuot say makes sense if you think about it. From a financial perspective, if I enter into a transaction with Reuven, and then suddenly again Shimon shows up to go ahead and discuss matters of the deal, Shimon is going to say to Reuven, I don't have any deal with you. I never dealt with you. I don't have any interest in dealing with you. My dealing is with silver. But however, if I convey to Reuven some financial interest, ultimately, again, in the metaltalin, then Reuven has every legal right to negotiate this case with Shimon. Amra Meimar. So Meimar said, Itafis lo mafkinon mine. So we'll say, this. Now look at Rashi. Itafis shaliach mishal ne'eman. So we'll say, listen to this. If the shaliach ended up seizing some of the property of Shimon, the holder of the metaltalin, then lo mafkinon mine. We do not extract that metaltalin. Now look at Rashi for just a moment. Lo mafkinon mine. So we'll say, interestingly enough, what this sounds like over here is the following. So what we've established is that in order for this shtar harshon, or what the Gemara calls the orkisa, the power of attorney, to work, so the shaliach has to have some financial interest. Let's say instead of having financial interest, the shaliach goes over to Shimon's house, and takes metaltalin from Shimon. In other words, Shimon has my 10 watches. Those 10 watches are worth, we'll call it $1,000 altogether. What happens? So Reuven my shaliach goes, and he takes Shimon's lawnmower, which happens to be worth $1,000 as well. So the Gemara says that if Reuven ended up seizing property from Shimon in satisfaction of the chov that Shimon owes me, we don't extract that object from Reuven in order to give it back to Shimon. Now, we'll say, now that is a general halacha, ultimately, again, in cases where party A owes party B money and doesn't pay. Where there's the concept, ultimately, we don't encourage it because it's like a shtickle vigilante justice, which we don't like. So we don't encourage a creditor to go and to seize property from a debtor. But if he did, in satisfaction of the debt, lemaisa, we don't extract it from the creditors. Here the Gemara is saying over here, same idea. If my shaliach, who let's say does not have a financial, I never conveyed to him a financial interest, but he ended up seizing a piece of property from Shimon that happens to be the same value of the debt that Shimon owes me, technically speaking, we will not extract that piece of property from Shimon, from Reuven, excuse me. Rav Ashi says, Kevan de Kasile, Kol de Misani Mindina Kabilas Alai, Shliach Shavya. So we'll say, now listen to this. Rav Ashi comes along and says, now Rav Ashi's arguing on a Meimar. Now Rashi happens to have a Lishna Achrina. If you go back to the Rashi, Lo Afkinan Mine, Lishna Achrina, V'itapas Shliach Mamon, Shehotzi, V'ikvali Atzmo, Lo Mafkinan Mine. So we'll say, now we're going to see this second version of Rashi is interesting. Second version of Rashi says that if I did a power of attorney with Reuven to go and extract my metaltalin from Shimon. So Reuven does a good job, he gets the metaltalin, only one problem, which is he keeps it for himself. So we'll say, interestingly enough, in the second version of Rashi, what it sounds like is what? We can't take it away from Shimon, that Shimon has a right to go ahead and keep it for himself. So just hold that in mind for just a moment. Rav Ashi says, no. Rav Ashi is arguing on a Meimar. And Rav Ashi says, Kevan de Kasvile called the Misani Mindina Kabila Salai, since I write in the Shtar Harsha, I write in the power of attorney to Reuven, any expenses that you will incur from adjudicating this case, I agree to pay for them. Therefore, I will say it's clear that what? Shavye Shaliach. It is clear that Reuven is my agent, right? I'm not conveying anything to Reuven, but rather Reuven is my agent. Therefore, what? Look at Rashi. Therefore, I will say, because I am picking up the full cost of the expenses of adjudicating the case. It is clear that Lamais, again, I am appointing Reuben as my shaliach. Hilchach, itafis, mafkinon mine. Therefore, I will say, if Reuben chooses to hold the object for himself, we do extract it. Ula lishna kamanami, itafis, mishal naaman, mafkinon. So we'll say, going with the second version of Rashi, if we go with the idea, I will say that the case that we're talking about over here is where Reuben, acting as my shaliach, goes in and seizes the property, or gets the watches back from Shimon, and then decides, you know what, I'm keeping it. Sameimar says, look, if he decides to keep it, there's nothing we can do about it. Rav Ash says, what are you talking about? From the fact that the Shtar Harshah says that I agree to pick up all of the costs of the litigation, of the adjudication, of all this stuff, it's clear that what? Reuven is acting as my shaliach. Therefore, if Reuven decides to keep the property just for himself, what does the halacha say? Rav Ash says, the halacha says, we extract it from him. He has no legal right to keep the property for himself, because this entire time he's been acting how? Simply as my shaliach. So we'll say, Machlokis, Rav Ashi, and the Meimar. The Ika, the Amar, others say, Shut for Shavye. Others say, Rav say, he's not as much my shaliach, rather what? He's my shutof, he's my partner. So the Mainafkim, and I will say, what's the chilik between being a shutof and a shaliach? A partner, ultimately, again, or an agent. So nafkamina, lemitfas palga. So I will say, there is a big difference. What's the big difference? If Reuven gets the watches back and what? Decides to keep half for himself. Does he have the halachic right to do so? Well, it depends. If you view him, ultimately, again, as a shutof, then he's a shutof. Then he can keep 50%. If you see him as a shaliach, then he has no entitlement to anything. Rashi says, over the mitzvah spalga, mamon shehevim rotza la'akev chetzio v'hilchasa. I will say, what is the halacha? Shliach shaviyeh. I will say, the halacha is that when you contract someone with a power of attorney, ultimately, again, unless otherwise specified, they are acting as your agent, they are acting as your shliach. Look at the last line in Rashi, ha'chi garsinon v'hilchasa shliach shaviyeh. Velo shakel midi. Therefore, I will say halacha lemaisa again. In the absence of any other defined agreement, if it's just a stamp power of attorney that gives someone the right to act on my behalf, I am not conveying to them anything. Rather, again, I'm simply empowering them to act as an extension of my arm, but they have no right to keep any of the item for themselves or any of the monies for themselves, but rather, again, they are just acting on my interest. And if they decide to, quote-unquote, decide to keep some of the money for themselves, what's going to be the halacha? The halacha will say we extract it from them because they have no entitlement. And I will say that indeed is halacha l'maisa. In a stam harshah, in a stam power of attorney, that's why, in a stam power of attorney, where I'm empowering the individual to act as my shaliach, I am not vesting them with any ownership interest, says the Mishnah.
I think it's actually a little bit of compensation.
That if it's stipulated. If it's stipulated, correct. So says the Mishnah, Gonov apishnai, v'talach umachar apiyem. So let's listen to this. Back, we're talking to Arba v'chamisha, 4 and 5 penalty payments. Gonov apishnai, so we'll say, if you go ahead and you stole the animal in front of two witnesses, and what? V'talach umachar apiyem. So let's say you have the same two witnesses who witnessed the geneva, who witnessed the theft, as well as the subsequent slaughter and sale. Oh, apishnai machir, or Rabbi Oseir, for that matter, I stole in front of two witnesses, and then there were a second set of witnesses who witnessed the slaughter and the sale. What's the halacha? Mishalim tashlume arba v'chamisha. Rabbi Oseir, the halacha is, I have to pay the penalty of 4 and 5 times. 4 and 5 times. Rashi says, apishnaim kilomar, shnaim idos shalav. So we'll say, so the first part of the Mishnah is telling me that the paradigmatic case is where it's the same witnesses who saw this entire process. They saw me steal and subsequently slaughter and sell. However, the Mishnah tells me that even if it's two separate set of witnesses, one who saw me steal and a second set of witnesses who saw me what? Slaughter and sell, then lemaisa I'm still going to be chayiv arba v'chamisha, the 4 and 5 times penalty payment. Next, ganav u'machar b'Shabbos. Let's listen to this. If I went ahead and stole the animal and sold it on Shabbos, or ganav u'machar la'avodah zarah, or Rabbi say I stole an animal and ultimately what? I sold it to avodah zarah. So both say, remember, both of these cases I will be chayiv for arba v'chamisha. Why? Because Rabbi say there's no kimle midrab. We're going to get into the Mishnah of kimle midrab midei, which means cases where from one act I incur dual liability, a financial obligation and a capital obligation, I mean, a death sentence and a financial obligation. We know the halacha says that whenever you do one act that results in two liabilities, two punishments, one of which is a death sentence, the death sentence negates the financial obligation. So in these cases over here, I'm stealing and selling on Shabbos. I've also said there's no killing with Rav Minei. Why? Because I haven't violated Shabbos. I mean, maybe I violated theft, which is not a specific Isra on Shabbos. I've sold an item on Shabbos, which is an Isra Drabbanon, but there's no death penalty. Same thing, Rabbi Osai, if I steal something and sell it to Avodah Zarah, selling something to be used for idolatrous purposes is not Avodah Zarah itself. Not good, but not the actual commission of Avodah Zarah. Therefore, no killing with Rav Minei. Therefore, I have to pay Arba V'Chamisha. However, similarly, got up at Tavach Yom Kippurim. So Rabbi Osai, if I went ahead and I stole an object and slaughtered it on Yom Kippur, so we'll say, in this case also, I'm still going to have to Arba V'Chamisha. Does a slaughtering on Yom Kippur carry with it a capital punishment? And the answer is no. It carries with it a chiyuv kares. And I will say, meaning if you go ahead and you do malach on Yom Kippur, that is kares, as opposed to Shabbos, which is skila. The nafkamina between that, I will say, is kimle bedramine, as we will see, does not apply to kares. It only applies to misos bezdin, to actual death penalties carried out in bezdin. Therefore, if I go ahead and I steal and slaughter on Yom Kippur, as much as I've incurred kares, I still have to pay arba v'chamisha. Or ganav mishalav, this is an interesting case. I stole from my father, v'tavach u'machar, and I stole, slaughtered, and sold my father's animal, v'achar kach meis aviv. And then what happens, Rabbi Osai? My father died. The father died. So listen to this, Rabbi Osai. Now, in this case, the father died when? The father died after the liability for arba v'chamisha has already been generated. So we're going to see what to do in this case. Look at Rashi. V'tavach u'machar v'achar kach meis aviv. So the Mishnah seems to tell me that I have to pay arba v'chamisha in this case. Rashi says, v'al meis aviv v'achar kach tavach u'machar tana v'seifa depater shar yarash tzav v'shlo tavach u'machar. We're going to see, we're going to contrast this with the case of where the father dies sometime earlier in this process, where essentially the son has already been yorish, the animal that he's quote unquote stealing, slaughtering, and selling. Next, so ganav tavach, or a person stole an animal, slaughtered the animal, and then he went ahead and consecrated the animal. Both in all of these cases, mishalim tashluma arba v'chamisha. So in all of these cases, you have to pay the 4 and 5 time penalty amounts. Ganav tavach l'refua. This is another interesting case. Let's say I went ahead and I stole and I slaughtered the animal, and I'm gonna use it for medicinal purposes. And I was about saying, I'm not using the animal for normative consumption purposes, but rather what? I'm using it ultimately for medicinal purposes. O l'klavim, or I'm feeding it to my dogs. Or hashochet v'nimtzei streifa, or Rabbos, I slaughtered the animal, and what happens? Bad mazel. It turns out the animal is a treifa and cannot be consumed. Or hashochet chulin ba'azara, or Rabbos, I go ahead and I slaughter unconsecrated animals in the azara of the Beis HaMikdash. In all of these cases, mishalem tashlumi arba v'chamisha. So we'll see the novelty in these cases, but in all of these cases, as much as they're not following the normative paradigm, nevertheless, you have to pay arba v'chamisha. However, Reb Shimon comes along and says, Reb Osai, that in the last two cases, which are the cases ultimately again of treifa, I slaughtered the animal and it turns out to be treifa, it's not kosher, it has some type of disqualifying blemish, or chulin ba'azara, I slaughter unconsecrated animal in the azara, Reb Shimon holds that in those two cases, you'll be putted from arba v'chamisha, from the 4 and 5 time penalty payments. Now says Rashi, why is that b'shnei elu, b'treifa b'chulin ba'azara, t'kasav Reb Shimon, shchita shen ruya lo shma shchita. Oh, we will see that Reb Shimon holds that an invalid shchita is not called shchita, and therefore you will not be chayiv arba v'chamisha in a case where the animal is a treifa, or is chulin ba'azara, where ultimately again the shchita does not permit the animal. So we'll explore that more in the Gemara. So says the Gemara, Leim Masis in the Lok Rabbi Akiva. So say that our Mishnah does not reflect the view of Rabbi Akiva. The Rabbi Akiva Ha'amar Dover V'lo Chati Dover. Now, also listen to this. This is really fascinating stuff. So the Gemara says that Api Shnei Edim or Api Shlosha Edim Yakum Dover. Witnesses. Testimonial unit is only valid if what? If it upholds a dover. Rabbi Akiva holds that a dover is a self-sustaining matter of testimony. That a testimonial unit is only considered to be significant if they are testifying about a full, a complete davar, a complete matter. Now we'll see what that means in just a moment. Look at Rashi. Davar v'lo chatzi davar, apishna edim yakum davar, v'hani edi tivicha diktani b'masnisin, o apishnayim edim, achirim chatzi davar. Listen to this, Rabosai. What did the Mishnah say? So remember, the Mishnah said that if you have two witnesses who saw the gneva, and saw the theft, and two witnesses that saw what? The tivicha and mechira, the slaughter and the sale, yuchayiv arba v'chamisha. Now, it just says the Gemara that we're according to Rabbi Akiva, because Rabbi Akiva says, testimony is only significant if witnesses are testifying about something that itself is a fully significant event. Now, when witnesses go ahead and testify that they saw me slaughter and sell an animal, so we'll say, is that testimony a full davar? And the answer is no. Why? Because Rabbi Osai, the testimony about the slaughter and sale of the animal is only significant if what? If you can go ahead and prove that I stole the animal. So it's only when there's testimony about the Geneva that the testimony about the Tvicha or Mechira is significant. But testimony about Tvicha and Mechira by itself is not significant, because otherwise it's just Tvicha and Mechira. I don't know, maybe it's my animal. Therefore, again, the fact that the Mishnah says, yet the Mishnah does hold, that if you have testimony about the Tvicha and Mechira by itself and about the Geneva by itself, that it would be Chayiv Arba V'Chamisha. So therefore, again, this Mishnah does not reflect the view of Rabbi Akiva. Current Rabbi Akiva, this would now. Current Rabbi Akiva, testimony is only complete when it is a full, when it is a full-fledged testimony. A self-contained testimony. Testimony ultimately is only meaningful. Eidos is only meaningful where it is a self-contained Eidos that could stand on its own, that does not require any corroborating eidos. So eidos testimony is only considered to be valid when it stands on its own and needs no other external corroboration. Says the amazing. So this sanya, Abba Rabbi Yossi, Kishach, Abba Chalapte, Rabbi Yochanan Ben-Uri, Lomot Torah, when Abba Chalapte learned Rabbi Yochanan Ben-Uri to learn Torah, Ra'amu Rabbi Yochanan Ben-Uri, Eitzel, Abba Chalapte, others say no, Rabbi Yochanan Ben-Uri went to Abba Chalapte, Amrlo, they said to him, Hari Sha'ach L'Shana Rishona, Bifnei Shnayim, Rabbi said, this is actually a great case, which we'll see in Bava Metzia. So listen to this. So let's say again, Hari Sha'ach L'Shana Rishona, Bifnei Shnayim, so we'll say, this is talking about Chazaka. So right, the Chazaka is that if you use property for 3 years, and no one objects ultimately again to your usage of that property, that you acquire it. You essentially have a chazaka. Now, obviously, there's a lot more to it, but for our purposes, this is fine. So what happens? Let's say you have witnesses that say, so you testified that you used the property for the first year, and shniya bifnei shnayim, second year, you have another set of witnesses that saw you use the property, shlishis bifnei shnayim, third year, you had another set of witnesses that saw that you used the property. So mahu, what's talacha? Amar lo, he said to him, Harezu chazaka. So this is a proper chazaka. So now you have testimony over all 3 years. Now granted, each year has its own set of witnesses, but that's proper chazaka. Amar lo, he said to him, Af ani omer kein, I agree with you. Elish Rabbi Akiva cholik b'davar. But here's the problem. Rabbi Akiva disagrees. Shai Rabbi Akiva omer davar v'lo chatzi davar. Because also Rabbi Akiva was of the opinion that said what? That in order for testimony, this has to be a davar, a self-contained eidos that needs no external corroboration or no external support. That I'm both saying, in this kind of case, when you have witnesses in year number one, so what's the impact of the, or let's say differently. Let's look at the year three witnesses. So the year three witnesses, their testimony is only meaningful if what? What? If you combine it with the testimony of years one and two. Rabbi Akiva says that's not a good testimony. Any testimony that requires external corroboration or external support is not davar, is not considered to be a full-fledged testimony. To the Gemara says, I'm Rabbi. So therefore, again, I will say, remember, we're saying therefore that our Mishnah can't reflect the view of Rabbi Akiva, because our Mishnah said that if you have one set of witnesses who say that what? Saw that Reuven stole the animal, and a second set of witnesses that saw that what? That Reuven slaughtered and sold the animal, that those two testimonies can combine to go ahead and create an obligation for Arba B'Chamisha. So okay, by the way, it's fine. Meaning, if it can't reflect the view of Rabbi Akiva, that's okay. We're just raising the kasha. To which the Gemara says, I'm Rabbi, I feel it's Rabbi Akiva. No. Our Mishnah can't reflect the view of Rabbi Akiva. How can you say that? So, Milo Mod Rabbi Akiva, Bishnaim Omrim Kidesh, Ushnaim Omrim Baal. So we'll say, doesn't Rabbi Akiva agree in the following case? Let's say you have two witnesses who say that Reuven was Mekadesh Leah, and then two other witnesses that say that Leah had relations with Shimon. Rabbi Sarai, so she had relations with someone other than her husband. Remember, when the witnesses come along and say that Leah had relations with Shimon, that testimony is only significant if what? If what? If you believe the first set of witnesses, or if you have the first set of witnesses who said that she accepted Kiddushin from Reuven. Yet, so the Gemara says, Apagav de Ede Bia Tzrichle Ede Kiddushin, Kevan de Ede Kiddushin Lo Tzrichle Ede Bia, Davar Karina Bey. Oh, we'll say, listen to this. Apparently, there's another twist to this. That even though Rabbi Akiva holds, that in order to be a bona fide testimonial unit, you have to satisfy the criteria of Davar. And Davar means that your testimony has to stand alone and not need any external corroboration or support from another testimonial unit. However, if you have multiple sets of witnesses, as long as somewhere in this chain of events, there is one set of witnesses whose testimony stands on its own without the corroboration of another set, it satisfies the criteria of Davar for this entire, for the entire unit of witnesses. So for example, in this case over here, first set of witnesses saw that Leah accepted Kiddushin from Reuven, and ultimately, again, second set of witnesses saw that Leah had relations with Shimon. So even though, again, the testimony of the second set of witnesses is only meaningful if you have the first set of witnesses that she was Mikudeshas, but since the first set of witnesses, their testimony does not require any independent corroboration, the Davar criteria has been satisfied, and therefore what? And therefore we will accept the testimony of the second unit as well. Hachinami, apagav de'ede tzricha tzrichi le'ede gneva. So as I saw too in this case over here, the witnesses for the slaughter and sale, they require the testimony of the first set of witnesses who say that what? That the object was stolen. Kevan de'ede gneva lo tzrichi le'ede tzricha. Davar Karina Bey. Rabbi says, since the witnesses for the theft, their testimony stands on its own, they don't require any external corroboration, therefore the Davar criteria for this case has been satisfied and we're okay. So we'll say what the Gemara is saying is fine. This is really fascinating. What the Gemara is suggesting is, we originally thought that the Davar criteria of Rabbi Akiva is applied to every single testimonial unit. Now we see that what? The Davar criteria is applied not to the unit, but what? To the case. And as long as there is one testimonial unit within the case that goes ahead and satisfies the Davar criteria, and the Davar criteria being that the testimony is fully self-sustaining. It requires no external corroboration. As long as one of the testimonial units in the greater case satisfies the Davar criteria, then what? You're good to go. Therefore, the Gemara suggests, and remember, this Abayi is a fascinating suggestion, that the Gemara is therefore suggesting, Abayi is suggesting, that our Mishnah can reflect the view of Rabbi Akiva. Why? Because Rabbi Akiva, remember, in our case, the case is comprised of multiple testimonial units, multiple sets of witnesses, or two sets of witnesses. Who is the case comprised of? The case is comprised of the first set of witnesses who testify about what? Right, that the object was stolen, the gneva, and then the second set of witnesses testify about what? Tvicha and mechira, the slaughter and sale. Now the reality is, the witnesses about the tvicha and mechira, they are not a self-sustaining testimonial unit because they require the first set of witnesses to give their testimony any kind of legitimacy. But the first set of witnesses are self-sustaining because they're testifying about gneva. Therefore, again, as long as within the case there is one testimonial unit who satisfies the Davar criteria, we are good to go, even according to Rabbi Akiva. Therefore, Abaye suggests our Mishnah can reflect the view of Rabbi Akiva as well. Fascinating Gemara. Rabbanan, hi Davar, what do they do with this Davar? Rabbanan must also hold of this Davar criteria to some degree. In other words, the testimony has to be complete and not deficient. Not a half a thing. Has to have to testify about a whole thing, not a half a thing. So lemi'utimai, what does this come to exclude? Lemi'utai, said the Rosa, this comes to exclude the following case. Echad Omer, Echad Begabo, the Echad Omer, Echad Bekresa. So we'll say, listen to this. Let's say witnesses come to testify about the physical maturation. Now this could be true about a boy or a girl. Now remember, the way we establish physical maturation is how? Is through two hairs. Through two hairs. Let's say one comes along and says that the child had one hair Well, let's use it as a girl, just for the sake of establishing her as a gedola. Ultimately, again, they saw one hair big gabah. Now, both say gabah literally means her back. But Rashi says over here, it means actually on her knuckles. Bekishrei etzvo. So, one hair on the knuckle. And ultimately, again, and one hair, kresa means the stomach, which would literally mean like the pubic area. So the Gemara says, if that's what it's coming to exclude, it can't mean that. Why? So we'll say, if one witness testifies about one hair, and one witness testifies about another hair, we'll say, that of course doesn't work. Why? Because neither of them are testifying about anything significant, right? The testifying about one hair to establish an adult status is meaningless. It must be that two witnesses are testifying about the appearance of one hair. They saw one hair on one part of the body. Two witnesses are testifying that they saw another hair on the other part of the body. In a case like this, ultimately, again, these two testimonial units would not work, right? Why? Because even though you have two witnesses about one hair, but each of these testimonies are simply insignificant, because each of them essentially are testifying about what? About the fact that the child is still a katan or a ketana. So according to the Rabbanon, the case of Darvo would come to exclude this case. Even though you have two witnesses, logically you'd want to say, well, if I have two witnesses about one hair, then wonderful, what do I have? I have ultimately, again, complete testimony about two hairs. It doesn't work that way, because since each testimonial unit is testifying about an insignificant piece, therefore, again, those testimonial units are insignificant themselves and do not combine. Just a little bit tighter. So, ganavu machar b'shabbos. So, remember, what was the case? So, if the thief goes ahead and steals and slaughters the animal on Shabbos. If the person steals and sells the animal on Shabbos, so we said you're chayif arba v'chamisha. Why you're chayif arba v'chamisha? Because remember, again, there's no capital case there. Because remember, I'm simply selling and stealing. So it says the Gemara, so therefore you're chayif arba v'chamisha. I've had tanya potter, but we learned elsewhere that you are potter, that you're not chayif arba v'chamisha. All right, Abraham, no, what's the case? Ki tanya hi de potter. What's the case of potter? But omer lo, so listen to this. So the Gemara says, what's the case where I would be chayiv? The case where I'm going to be chayiv Rabbi Osai is where? Well, watch this case. I go ahead and I steal an object, and I sell it to Reuven. And what happens? Well, let's say Nami. Reuven steals an object, and he wants to sell it to Shimon. And what happens? Shimon says, fine, I'm going to buy the object. Do me a favor. As payment for the object, just take a fig off my tree. He tells Reuven, the seller, to go ahead and take a fig off his tree as payment for the stolen object. And what happens? Reuven does that. The Rabbi Osai, remember, the act of taking a fig off the tree is what? Is an act of Chol Shabbos. And if you do that intentionally, again, you're Chayiv Misa. That's one of the Lametes Malachos, right? One of the 30 Malachos is Kotzer. Oker Davar Mimokum Gidulo. Therefore, the Gemara suggests over here that, so remember, we're trying to reconcile the Mishnah that says you're Chayiv versus the Braisa that says that you're Potter. To which the Gemara says, the case of the Braisa that says that you're Potter is a case where what? Is a case where I did incur a capital liability. I did incur a death penalty. How would you incur a death penalty? In a case where I'm trying to sell the item, and the purchaser says, okay, if you want to sell the item, take that fig off my tree as payment for the item. Since the act of taking the fig off the tree is what? Is a malacha, I will be chayav a death penalty ultimately for Shabbos violation. That would be a case of kimlein b'dirab aminei, where I would not be chayav arba v'chamisha ultimately for the sale of the item. All right, we'll stop over here. Meretz Hashem, we'll pick up with this case tomorrow.
The property would then be considered covered for the buyer?